Picking up the conversation now where we were in hour number one. And talking more about the Michigan Auto No Fault Reality Tour. Talking about the big changes to No Fault Insurance. Michigan had a model unlike any other insurance model in the country when it came to auto accidents, injuries involving automobiles, whether you're a pedestrian on a bike and an automobile, if you're injured in a car, dramatically injured, brain injury, spinal injury, you were covered by the Catastrophic Care Fund, and so you had first-class care for the rest of your life. You wouldn't bankrupt your family or yourself. It was something different. People said it was too expensive, though, and they pushed back. And then in June of this year, Governor Whitmer signed a bill changing everything. And it has not gone over well in some circles. Joining me now, Stephen Sinus, partner with the Sinus Dramus Law Firm in Lansing, Michigan. Stephen, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, obviously, this was a model that was different than anything in the country, but you've got 15,000 people, give or take, on this Catastrophic Care Fund that has about $25 billion, depending on who you ask. And they had first-class care, but everything has been changed now because of what the governor signed in June. And now there's been a lawsuit filed. Tell us about the lawsuit. Tell us about the pushback, first of all.
Yeah, well, I really appreciate you giving the intro that you did because it really establishes the right context for this discussion. This is not just about auto insurance in terms of insuring our vehicle. This is about health care in America. And as we all know, health care in America doesn't work for a lot of people. It's a fractured system. And so what we had here in Michigan was a model so that anybody who was severely or catastrophically injured and needed lifelong care was going to get it. And that's why No Fault has been the law of the land for over 40 years in this state. And what happened in June was a rush to fix issues that were in the No Fault system. Nobody denies that there were issues that needed to be addressed, but there was a rush to fix. There was no hearings on these bills. These bills were passed at 2 a.m. in the House of Representatives, and then when the actual bill that became law was rolled out, it was rolled out about an hour before all these legislators voted on it. I was down at the Capitol. These legislators didn't even know what they were voting on. So getting to the lawsuit, what the lawsuit is the first round of legal action our firm and other constituents decided to take as we looked at this law and realized what they really did. And what they did is impose constitutionally impermissible government controls on people's access to care.
Now, what do you mean by that? When you say constitutionally impermissible, because you're asking for the courts to declare the law signed by the governor to be unconstitutional. For those of us that are, for laymen, if you will, make it easy for us.
Well, what we first have to understand is that there are many different issues in this law, and in the lawsuit that we filed covers several of them, but not all of them. So we're asking for a declaration that certain aspects of this law be ruled unconstitutional. And so let me give you an idea about what's going on here.
All right.
First of all, there's this issue of in-home care, and we have a plaintiff by the name of Ellen Anderry, who was catastrophically brain injured in a horrible crash and has been receiving very good, top-of-the-line, high-quality care from her family. And what this law says has got two problems for Ellen Anderry with regard to the at-home attendant care. First of all, she had full rights under the old law to have her family members paid. They've taken times out of their job. They've taken times out of their schooling. They've all banded together to provide this care, and they all could be paid. This law, the first problem is, tries to change the contract Ms. Anderry had with her insurance company. So the legislature decided to pass a law here.
Just so I'm clear about that. It would change the contract that was in effect, and there was consideration on both sides for this contract between the insured and the insurance company. And one other note, her significant other is a doctor in this field of medicine. So why would he be prevented from taking care of his wife? Carry on.
Yeah, so you have this first fundamental problem that the legislators thought was a good idea to go in and change the rules that govern contracts that people bought from their insurance company years ago. So that's the first fundamental problem from a constitutional standpoint. The state can't interfere with contracts. But when you get to this issue of home care, what they've done in this law is impose this rule that says that if it's somebody who knows you, a family member or anybody you had any type of social or business relationship providing you care, they only can be paid for 56 hours a week, forcing somebody like Ellen Anderry to look to strangers to have to come into her house to provide care. So when it comes down to it, there's this arbitrary line in the sand that says, well, if you know the person, they only can get paid for 56 hours. But if you want to get more than that, you got to hire a total stranger.
So where does the 56 hours even come from?
It comes from the minds of the legislators who decided to put this into a bill that had no scrutiny or hearings to tell people, why are you drawing this law in the sand or line in the sand? If there are issues with care and what they're really trying to do is trying to reform certain aspects of how these claims were made, this was not the right way to do it. And we believe it's constitutionally permissible because it's just this discrimination against the Andere's family members and friends from providing her the care that she needs, forcing her to have strangers come into her house and provide her the care.
So explain to me, if you would, Stephen, I just want to follow the process, because it's always about the process when you get into a legal matter, right? It's I wish it were black and white, but it's never that easy. You know, you practice law every day. There's a process now. What are the steps in this process, and how long do you think this may take? Because this law will take full effect July 2020 if it's not declared unconstitutional, or some other if someone doesn't intervene in the interim.
Yeah, well, let me first just address one other aspect of the main arguments, which is this arbitrary fee schedule where they have providers who provide services payable under Medicare getting paid a whole lot more than the providers that provide services that aren't necessarily payable under Medicare getting paid a whole lot less, which is really the post-acute side, the brain injury, the residential care. There's a whole host of services that are now going to be paid at dramatically lower rates, 45% payment reduction to those care providers. So those providers are at the risk of going out of business. So you have this issue of providers being paid completely different rates just based on what kind of services they provide. We also find it to be constitutionally permissible. Now, getting to your question, what we filed was a declaratory judgment action, which means, in layman's terms, we're asking the court to declare that these aspects of the law and some other related matters are all unconstitutional. So we just filed the lawsuit. It takes a while for a lawsuit to get going. We're serving it on the insurance companies that were named as defendants, who are the insurance companies of these people that we represent. And so it's going to take a few months, but then there's going to be heavy briefing. And it's going to take a long time for the trial court to get the briefing and make a ruling. And then once the trial court makes a ruling, the next step is the Court of Appeals. So if we were to lose in the trial court, we would look into filing an appeal. If we were to win, I bet you anything that the insurance companies involved would appeal to the Court of Appeals. And then that would take, its own round of briefing and probably another year. And then it would go to the Supreme Court. There's a chance that it could be fast-tracked
because
of the significance of the issues. But yes.
Stephen Sinus with me from the Sinus Dramus Law Firm. Can you hold through the break? I got a couple more questions I have to get to based on what you said. If you can hold just a couple minutes more.
Absolutely.
All right. Hold on right there. Stephen Sinus here with us. Because I want to get to the point that if this takes months or years and appeals and so on and so forth, then what about the people that are injured today or tomorrow or July 15th of 2020? What happens to their coverage for brain injuries or spinal cord injuries? How are they covered? So hold that thought. We got to go to a break. Just hold that thought, Stephen. I'm just going to hold you right there. We'll be right back on the Steve Gruber Show and get to those questions and more. Don't go anywhere.
We first opened about 10 years ago. We were small, just a few of us, but it was exciting. I always dreamt of having my own business. It was kind of slow at first, but things started picking up. We had big plans, but in our wildest dreams, we never, never thought we'd have this much work. Yeah, with so many businesses caught off guard by the storm, Reed Waste Management has never been busier.
What will become of your business after a disaster? Nearly two-thirds of businesses aren't prepared for an emergency. And 40% of businesses that experience a disaster never recover. Make an emergency plan now before it's too late. For a free online tool that helps you develop an emergency plan to keep your business up and running should disaster strike, visit ready.gov/business. Brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, the American Red Cross, and the Ad Council.
Our I remember the moment.
I remember the moment.
I'll never forget that moment.
As long as I live.
As long as I live.
A storage tank ruptured, and for miles, chemicals were pushing up against the riverbanks.
This was a big, big deal, and it was going to have a serious impact on communities up and down the river.
I remember the moment. This local guy came up to me and said, they call the guard out for this stuff?
You probably thought we were all about hurricanes, tornadoes, fighting Mother Nature.
Hey, it's a chemical spill. It's a disaster.
It affects the water supply, threatens wildlife.
We're talking about the health of entire communities and people's livelihoods.
You bet we're ready for these kinds of things.
We were out there with booms to prevent the spill from expanding.
We're responsible for protecting and monitoring the sensitive wetlands.
I also remember the moment that same guy came up to me and said, I don't know what we would have done if they hadn't called the guard up.
Learn more about how you can protect your friends, families, neighbors, and the environment. Everything that makes up your community. Go to NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by Michigan National Guard, aired by the Michigan Association of Broadcasters and this station.